This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The question in a conflict such as this is that there's a moment for negotiations and for peace processes to start. And I'm not sure we've reached that moment.
That's Professor Roland Henwood, who lectures on politics at the University of Pretoria, on the prospect of six African leaders trying to nudge Russia and Ukraine to reach a peace deal. Details coming up. Also, gunmen targeted a convoy of U.S. embassy staffers in Nigeria. And in Cameroon, 18 separatists have surrendered. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. As fighting continues in Sudan, the United Nations Humanitarian Response Plan is seeking billions to help people affected by the crisis, and the UN Refugee Agency is seeking more funding to assist those forced to flee. Ramesh Rajesh Ingham, head of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Geneva and director of the Coordination Division today, said the team is seeking $2.56 billion.
The conflict that erupted on the 15th of April last month in Sudan has killed hundreds of people, injured more than 5,000 people, and millions more have been confined to their homes, unable to access basic services and essential health care. And nearly a million people have been displaced, many across to neighboring countries. Today, 25 million people, more than half the population of Sudan, need humanitarian aid and protection. This is the highest number we have ever seen in the country. The response plan we are launching today reflects that new reality.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees said that agency is seeking $472 million to assist more than 1 million people over the next 6 months. On April 15th, Sudan's army, led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, commanded by Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, broke into open conflict. The two leaders, who had been leaders of the country's military government, disagreed over talks to create a transitional government, leading to civilian control. The office of South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says preparations are being made for a delegation of six African heads of state to visit Eastern Europe to discuss a plan to end the war in Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky have agreed to separate meetings in Moscow and Kiev with the African leaders. Ramaphosa has not given a time frame or outlined any parameters for the potential peace talks. Darren Taylor reports.
Ramaphosa said he'd be joined by the leaders of Egypt, Republic of Congo, Senegal, Uganda, and Zambia for what he called a peace mission to Eastern Europe.
The US and the Europeans are going to view this proposal with some skepticism.
Dr. Richard Gowan is the International Crisis Group's representative at the United Nations. He points out that four of the six African countries, Congo, Senegal, South Africa, and Uganda, abstained from a United Nations vote last year condemning Russia's invasion. Zambia and Egypt voted in favor of the motion, but both have strong ties with Moscow. Gowan says the Ukrainians would be concerned that South Africa's leading the peace push. The African National Congress government has said it's neutral in the conflict, but it has also been accused of selling weapons and ammunition to Russia, which it denies, and South Africa's top army general met with his Russian counterpart in Moscow on Monday.
The first task for the African mediation group will be to convince Kiev and Kiev's allies that this is a good faith initiative that could actually lead to a deal that would satisfy the Ukrainians.
Zelensky has said he would not consider a peace deal to end the war until Russian forces withdraw completely from Ukrainian territory. Professor Roland Henwood lectures politics at the University of Pretoria.
The question in a conflict such as this is that there's a moment for negotiations and for peace processes to start. And I'm not sure we've reached that moment. Both leaders in Ukraine and Russia seem to be convinced that they can win this militarily, and that normally does not augur well for negotiations.
He thinks something's happening behind the scenes to open the door for an African peace push.
The challenge here for Ukraine is how long can they sustain what is happening? The country is being destroyed, and they can get as much military aid as possible. They have a finite number of troops. They can only endure so much. Maybe Russia is in more difficulty than it seems. The sanctions definitely is having an effect. It may have a stronger effect than we think. Maybe the war is going worse than we think for Russia, and they may be more amenable.
Gowan says it's essential that any attempted peace process takes both Russia's and Ukraine's interests into account.
The Ukrainians are very concerned that there will be a push for a ceasefire, and that even if Russia did pause its hostilities, it would simply use that as an opportunity to firm up its control over the parts of Ukraine that it has seized.
In his statement, Ramaphosa said the US and Britain expressed cautious support for an African peace plan, but Henwood doubts they'd be involved too much, as they're Ukraine's major allies and Moscow views them as enemies. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Gunmen targeted a convoy of U.S. Embassy staffers in southeast Nigeria yesterday, killing two of its Nigerian workers and two policemen. Police say the attackers opened fire on the convoy along a major road in Ogbaru local government area in Anambra State, one of the epicenters of separatist violence in the region. Reporter Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt spoke with Kenga Tochakwa, a deputy superintendent of police and spokesperson of Anambra State Police Command, about the attack.
Well, currently, there is a joint security force operation going on there that has to do with police, military, and even the vigilantes. We are not leaving no stone unturned in this regard. We are also talking with the villagers to help us with information. And I believe in due time, we have a positive outcome of what the operation that we have just embarked on. We will get back to the members of the public in that regard. For us, the battle against these insurgents remain focused and sustained until security stability is fully restored in the state.
Okay, PPRO, we also understand that some persons were also kidnapped or abducted by the unknown gunmen. Can you confirm that?
And that's why I say there's a joint operation currently ongoing now. Since yesterday, and in due time, we believe with the way the operation is going, we believe that something positive will come out of it.
That was Ekenga Tochokwa, a deputy superintendent of police and spokesperson for Anambra State Police Command. He spoke with journalist Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt by phone. The spokesman of Libya's parliament in the east, Abdoulaye Belig, says the legislature has suspended Fatih Bashagha as prime minister of an administration challenging that of Tripoli. The administration's finance minister, Osama Hamad, was assigned to act as prime minister during an investigation of Bashagha. Wolfgang Porstai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi what prompted the parliament to take this action after relying on Bashagha to challenge the authority of the Western-based prime minister, Abdelhamid Dabiba.
Fatih Bashagha was, during the revolution, a very prominent, maybe the most prominent, Misrata military leader. He was Minister of the Interior in the Serraj government until 2021, and even more important, in 2019-2020, he was the main leader of the defense of Tripoli against the attack of Khalifa Haftar. As such, he seemed to be well-suited and was appointed by the HR in March 2022 to chase GNU Prime Minister Dabeba out of his office. But he has not met the HR expectations in any way. He has right now very limited usefulness as a pressure tool against Dabeba. In a recent report, the HR, Parliamentary Administrative Oversight Committee, accused Bashagha of corruption and wasting public funds. They said that he had failed to fulfill numerous promises, including he failed to move into Tripoli. However, there are conflicting statements as whether he is really corrupt and is there really an evidence about corruption. But some influential HR parliamentarians who sought long to replace Bashagha used this opportunity to chase him out. Fateh Bashagha was aware of all these developments, and he handed over his duties, as he said, on a temporary basis to his deputy, Ali Qatrani. Thereafter, he moved to Misrata and arrived there yesterday evening, well out of reach of the House of Representatives.
Although Bashagha himself hails from Libya's west, he chose to strike an alliance with the eastern-based figures, Khalifa Haftar and Parliamentary Speaker Aqila Saleh, in the name of national reconciliation. Deputies assigned his finance minister, Osama Hamid, to act as a prime minister while investigation takes place. How does that change the dynamics in Libya's political scene?
Actually, GNS Deputy Prime Minister Ali Qatrani refuses to recognize the HOR's decision and those also Hamad as a new interim prime minister. But I don't think his opinion will really matter. I would say it is likely that the HOR will soon attempt to form a new government. Talks with the High Council of State could be also reopened for this purpose in the next days. In Tripolitania and especially in Misrata, the HOR's actions will be seen as an evidence that there is no possibility to trust the HOR or the leading forces behind it. So there are no partners for any kind of real rapprochement or reconciliation, as they couldn't be trusted. Overall, I would say Bashagha's sacking points to an imminent escalation of the political situation, and this might be also relevant for Tripolitania. Bashagha himself is politically done. He burned most of his bridges with the Western political elites.
Diplomacy now is focused on bringing the parliament and another legislative body, the High State Council, to agree on rules that would allow an election to take place. However, senior figures in the parliament have pushed for a new interim government before any election, a move their opponents see as a delaying tactic to put off a vote and hang on to their positions. What's your take on that?
The main aim of the House of Representatives, namely to replace Labib as a prime minister, remains the same. But I don't think this will work in the future. I think Fateh Bashagha was the best card they could play. The kingmakers in Tripoli remain the same, the CBL governor Sadiq al-Kabir and the mighty militia leaders. But if this would work and if they would be able to establish a new interim government, recognized throughout Libya, elections could be much easier to be organized. As said, I doubt that this will work. There are also rumors that LNA commander Khalifa Haftar is behind the replacement of GNSPM Prime Minister Bashagha in order to fill several ministerial posts, people loyal to him. There are alleged talks between his son Saddam and several prominent militia leaders from the West in Cairo. And these talks are allegedly also about an agreement about ministerial posts. However, I don't see any logical connection between the Cairo talks and the sacking of Bashagha. In any case, Bashagha was virtually without influence and as such no danger to Dabeba and of no use to Haftar anymore. And I would say it's also unlikely that Dabeba would be ready and willing to hand key ministerial posts over to Khalifa Haftar. If he would do so, any cooperation with the LNA commander would do a massive damage to Dabeba, especially in his hometown, Misrata.
That was Wolfgang Poshtai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Officials in Cameroon say 18 separatists have disarmed and surrendered to authorities in the biggest defection since the conflict broke out in 2017. Authorities say the English-speaking rebels, including two self-proclaimed generals, were hiding across the border in Nigeria. Leaders of the separatists who want to break away from French-speaking majority Cameroon have vowed to track down and kill the defectors. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Cameroon's military says 18 fighters, including David Dibo, alias General Baron, and Ekpe Jerome, alias General JB, surrendered and handed over their weapons in Mondemba Tuesday. Mondemba is a town in Cameroon's English-speaking southwest region that shares a border with Nigeria. Since 2017, separatists have been fighting to carve out an independent state called Ambazonia in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest and southwest regions. The self-proclaimed General Baron says he convinced the fighters to surrender. He says Cameroon military firepower was more than they could bear and that he saw several hundred fighters killed by government troops within the past 6 years.
We also beg our brother and we did it from Istanbul.
He says he is pleading with scores of fighters who are still hiding in the bush to drop their weapons and be pardoned by the Cameroon government. He says fighters hiding on the border with Nigeria should hand their weapons to Cameroon police or government troops as he did, without which they will be killed by either hunger, disease, or in battles. Speaking with Cameroon's state broadcaster CRTV on Tuesday, Baron says the fighters handed their weapons to Cameroon military and government officials in Dian, an administrative unit where Mundeba is located. Gilbert Gubai Baldena is the highest Cameroon government official in Dian. He has assured the former fighters that the government will protect them.
General Baron and all of you, run away to Nigeria because it's difficult to continue. Tell the others who are still in the bush to come out. The head of state wants every Cameroonian take part in the reconstruction and development of the country.
Baldena also warned that separatist fighters who refuse to surrender and drop their weapons will be killed by Cameroon government troops. Following their surrender, the government says the former fighters will be taken to the Center for Disarmament, Demobilization and Reintegration, or DDR in Boya, capital of Cameroon's English-speaking southwest region. The government says the defections are the largest number of fighters to surrender in a single day and the first time two dreaded generals dropped their weapons and surrendered to Cameroon's military. Separatists on social media, including Facebook and WhatsApp, say they will attack and kill all fighters who resign and join DDR centers created by Cameroon's central government in Yaoundé. The government says fighters who surrender will be pardoned, trained to create businesses, and reintegrated socially. Battles between Cameroon government troops and Western separatists escalated to armed conflict in 2017. Cameroon English-speaking separatists are fighting to carve out an independent English-speaking state from the French-majority nation. The International Crisis Group estimates the conflict has killed about 6,000 people and displaced more than 500,000. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
In Tunisia, the former head of parliament and leader of the Muslim Democratic Party, El-Enhad, Rachid Ghannouchi, has been sentenced in absentia to 1 year in prison and fined 1,000 Tunisian dinars. He was charged with glorifying terrorism, and his family says he faces other charges as well. Reporter Elisia Volkman has more from Tunis.
Rachid Ghannouchi's wife and lawyers learnt he had been convicted and sentenced when it was mentioned in a current affairs chat show late Monday night. Her daughter, Samai Ghannouchi, said that there was no official announcement, not even on the national news. Ghannouchi was arrested and detained 1 month ago, but since then has refused to cooperate with authorities or any judicial process and had instructed his lawyers to boycott the proceedings.
We were completely shocked at the sentence itself, at the ridiculous charge. My father has been a target of extremists himself because of his condemnation of extremism and defense of moderation and democracy. There was no actual trial. When the lawyers arrived, they were told that the verdict had already been issued. So the verdict was not actually read out in court as it's usually done.
Rashid Ghannouchi, head of the Muslim Democratic Party in Ennahda, is one of around 30 opposition politicians, judges and journalists who have been detained in recent months. All are charged with some form of conspiracy against state security. Ghannouchi's charge of glorifying terrorism is related to the video of a eulogy he gave last at a party member's funeral. A member of the police union filed the complaint all because of the word tyrant. Yusra Ghannouchi explains how saying this word has landed her father in prison.
A common word with a clear meaning in Arabic, which is tyranny or tyrant. However, there is also a hijacking of this term and use by extremists against the police. So the security unions claim that my father was referring to them, but it is clear from the context and the publicly available speech that he said that he was referring to tyrants in general.
Rashid Ghannouchi's chief advisor, Ahmed Galoul, told Voice of America that the case was possible because Tunisian President Kais Saied cracked down on the judiciary and dismissed 57 judges last year and brought the justice system under his control. Saad Sabil Chelli with Human Rights Watch says that the case is an abuse of the law.
The conviction of Rashid Ghannouchi to 1 year in prison is a new demonstration of the authorities' use of the anti-terrorism law to discredit and eradicate the opposition.
Rights groups say President Saied has cracked down on opposition as the economy continues to weaken. The United States and European unions have expressed concern about efforts to silence the government's critics. For Voice of America Africa, I'm Elysia Folkman in Tunis, Tunisia.
South Africa is facing a massive influx of German cockroaches, described by experts as near pandemic. They say rainy, hot and humid conditions over the past 2 years could have enabled the insects to increase their breeding ability. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Cockroaches are the latest addition to South Africa's list of troubles topped by power cuts, unemployment, poverty and lack of housing. The insects, popularly known for plying their trade at night, are reportedly now operating even daytime. Gerhard Verdun is the operations and stewardship manager at Crop SA, a crop protection and public health organization. He told the local media that the outbreak is now countrywide.
I've never seen something like this in my life since about February last year. We started seeing that more and more calls coming in from people with enormous numbers of cockroaches in the kitchens and in the residences. It's so bad. If people do a proper fumigation, you see the kitchen littered with like a black carpet of dead cockroaches. So we are at the pandemic outbreak level of cockroaches.
The intruders have forced the residents to tighten security around foodstuffs and leftovers by storing them in containers with tight lids. Johannesburg resident Portia Masamula told VOA that the cockroaches have become both a nuisance and an embarrassment.
So you'll be sitting with your visitors and then here comes one very brave cockroach in the middle of the day that walks up your wall. So it makes it seem as if like your place is dirty or you don't clean. It just gives that impression. So, and it's hard to get rid of them once you have one. By the next 2-3 weeks, you have a million.
Nomthandazo Somhlongo also stays in Johannesburg. She told VOA that the bugs have almost taken over their kitchens.
Yo, they too many is like ants. And they're irritating a lot. Sometimes you're cooking in the kitchen. As soon as you put a spoon somewhere, you're going to find them there a lot. And sometimes when there are too many, you can't even eat. You can't even just take food and give it to the child without checking or warming up.
Crop SA has warned the public to avoid using unregistered chemicals in fumigating their homes, as may not only kill the insects, but endanger the health of humans. Reporting for VOA News in Johannesburg, I am Tuso Kumalo.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.